Hey, welcome back to Spilling the G&T Podcast. You're here with Bolo.
And Dr. Tom.
Now we're here to give you the opinion you never really asked for.
But we're giving it anyway.
That's right.
Now Bolo has a performer.
Dr. Tom's a psychiatrist.
Oh.
And we're here to give you our professional review on
RuPaul's Drag Race Season 16.
Echo. So let's raise a glass.
Or a bottle.
And start spilling.
G&T.
Clink. Everyone, welcome back to another live review podcast. You know how it works. We watch it live. We cut in segments, and along the way, you get to hear our thoughts, Mama.
Thank you. That is so nice to hear. Thank you for finally explaining the format to me. I've just got it.
You're
going to do better today.
That's basically it.
How are you, Paolo?
Tom, I'm well. I'm fine. I'm good. I'm chilling. I've had a lovely focaccia. Is this a focaccia?
Yeah, it's focaccia, yeah.
Focaccia sandwich.
Lovely.
And I feel nourished.
Good.
And ready. I feel galvanized. And I feel like a glamazon drag queen.
Ready to stomp the runway, bitch.
Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Can I get an amen up in here?
Should we drop in a few more RuPaul sound bites just to prove we watched the show?
Yeah, we'll
be like Stacey Dooley, won't we?
She wasn't a snatch game.
Oh, Rue, if you don't love yourself, how the hell are you going to check's notes? Love somebody else.
I think that she brought her charisma, uniqueness, nerve and talent. It was such a crash course in Drag Race. Like, how do you not know anything? This is what happens when you get no one in the industry, no one in the drag world as a guest, and then they're like throwing all the cliches, all like the drag 101 crap. Because if you don't love yourself, how are you gonna love somebody? It's just like, okay, yeah, we know, very
sweet young lady.
She did a quick Google search on Drag Race.
Yeah,
you could have got any gay off the street and they would have known the insides and outs. They would have known what happened on Untucked on season 7, episode 3. They would have known it off the cuff.
Well, we often talk, don't we, about like, why don't they take a little leaf out of Dracula's book and just get some amazing, iconic pre-Drag Race queens on as guest judges? You know, Coco Peru, Peaches Christ, all these amazing legends.
Even Lady Bunny.
Well, I don't think RuPaul and Lady Bunny, I think they'll always be friends, but I'm not sure if they're like bosom buddies.
I've read something because Lady Bunny did come for RuPaul because she had
she does it a lot.
She did something where she hosted the facts are, basically what had happened was RuPaul was hosting a place that had hosting something
the under online
her
bookstore
name. Yeah, that was hosting anti LGBT.
It was really weird situation.
I read something and they're like, how come you're still friends with her? And then I think Lady Bunny, you know, it was really good because I read it. She said, you guys have to remember that when they met, they were young, drug-fueled people who met, you know, in their youth. And you know what? They're both grown since then. And now they both have their own values and they're just different people.
They're incredibly. They will always have, I think, a shared bond because of what they were doing in a very trailblazing, pioneering way in the 80s and 90s. But yeah, they're very different people. RuPaul is an empire. Lady Bunny is still very much, you know, and I mean this with the utmost respect, like a queen of the people sort of thing. I do follow her on Instagram and she's a very interesting character. She's very outspoken politically and I don't agree with a lot of what she says. And I think a lot of her followers don't actually, but it's her right to say it. She is outrageously funny.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, I would love to see a Lady Bunny show one day. But speaking of, this is a little segue. Speaking of changes that could be made to the Drag Race format, what did you think of Naisha Lopez's comments at Roscoe's, which have gained traction? A lot of people have been talking about. You know what I'm talking about, don't you, Bolo?
I know what you're talking about.
So, with casting, would you love to see something different happen with casting?
Yeah, I think diversity is the name of the game and nothing can go like, I think as much diversity as we can possibly get, the better. I would love to see a drag king on there. Why not?
I would love to see that. However, it's like I feel the way I feel about Shakira and J-Lo doing the Super Bowl. I think they both needed their own gig. I think drag kings, their art form is very, believe it or not, it is different. It's a different take. It's a different person that does drag king, and I think we need to focus on that and not just throw them into Drag Race. Like one of, you know what I mean? I think drag kings need their own gig. I think they're so good at what they do. Why do you have to put them in this one? Why can't we give them like their own drag king thing? The challenges are different. They're presenting as male, right? Yeah. Most of the time. So I think it's a little bit different.
It's still drag.
Yeah.
So that's basically what we're here to discuss. You know, it's a hot topic, but I think it's, I think that we should maybe weigh in about it. And it's good that you brought that up.
Our opinions are incredibly important and powerful.
How do I feel about this statement? It's multi-layered, okay. To be honest, Tom.
Multi-layered.
There's several layers on this. Mm-hmm. The first thing is I need to understand where Naisha's coming from. Now, when we look at Naisha, she's a pageant queen through and through.
I think people forget she's a Miss Continental winner. Yeah. She's a very prestigious pageant queen. She's not just the girl who kind of didn't go very far on a couple of seasons of Drag Race.
Yeah. So I think at her core, that's what drag is.
Yes.
So
it will affect her view.
Exactly. Mm. And I think what we're seeing and what we're hearing here is her opinion on drag as she knows it, and also as she cherishes it.
Yeah.
I think she just has so much love and respect for it, and it's unfortunately it's coming across as quite narrow minded. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit shallow.
When I try to unpick what Naisha is saying, I think that she didn't convey herself very eloquently in this situation. I think she's trying to say that she really appreciates drag kings and their talents, but she doesn't feel that there's a place for them on Drag Race, which I would fundamentally disagree with.
Of course. It's basically, oh my God, girl, I see you. I hear you. I love what you do. Just not here. Just not in my space. Just not around me.
Yes.
And it's very old school.
Yeah. And as is rightly pointed out during the course of this conversation, it wasn't that long ago that conversation was being had about trans women in Drag Race. And of course, that was preposterous. There's, of course, a place for trans women in Drag Race, and they've more than demonstrated that they excel in the format. And, you know, we know that they're an integral part of the fabric of the LGBTQIA community and the drag scene. Now, I think Naisha says a couple of misguided things about drag kings that show that she's never seen Dragula.
Girl, she is going to be Mayhem Miller. She is literally, if anyone's listening to Drag Race UK versus the world, she is Mayhem Miller on episode one when she walked in and she did not know any of the international queens because she does not watch anything but Drag Race US. She only watches US drag. She doesn't know anything about what's happening. She doesn't watch Dragula. She doesn't watch Drag Race Philippines. She doesn't watch. She doesn't watch Drag Race UK.
My favorite bit was like to Charitha and Arantxa. How do you guys know each other? So funny, but certainly because my she keeps on making this point that the format's not set up for drag kings, and I put the question to you: can you name a challenge where a drag king couldn't excel? And I'm thinking kind of like Landon Cider, Tenderoni. I would class Throb Zombie as a drag king as well. They're a non-binary performer, but they have a very king presentation. Also, I absolutely fell in love with Jarvis Hammer.
Exactly.
On the latest Dragula. These are phenomenally polished, talented drag performers who are just the tip of the iceberg of drag king talent. And you cannot tell me that Landon Cider wouldn't murder most seasons of Drag Race.
Throb Zombie would eat so many people up alive. It's just such, it is quite preposterous for her to say that, Tom.
Do you know what else is preposterous?
What is?
An elephant.
They're part of the dinosaur family. Did you know that? They're part of the dinosaur family.
That's an America's Next Top Model deep cut, guys.
Yeah. For the real fans out there, you know, America's Next Top Model, mm-hmm. we see you.
Now, Nasha trips herself up a couple of times, unfortunately, because I was outraged by the runway theme example she gave of how does a drag king do Madonna? Excuse me? Madonna, who has had so many kind of androgynously and masculine presenting looks, a drag king could fantastically do a Madonna look, or just turn a super femme look on its head and and present them in a mask way. It's a creative drag king would easily excel. And like, what can't they do? Snatch Game. We have so many male characters on Snatch Game. Acting challenges.
I mean, we saw Kennedy win with
years ago.
You know, it's weird. And then we also had Flavor Flav by Shea Coulee.
It's almost the norm now to have a couple of masculine or male presenting characters on Snatch Game.
We had Mo Hart do Titus Andromedon.
We've just seen two people do Manny the Boxer.
Exactly. It's
just not a thing anymore.
It's a very outdated way of thinking.
Even that has taken a while to progress in Drag Race, because I remember in season 5 when Alaska rocked up looking like Pee Wee Herman.
In the children's TV show.
Yeah. And Rue was outraged. And Alaska very rightly said, I'm in drag, Rue. And she was. Just a different kind of drag.
But you're in boy drag.
Rue herself said we're all born naked and the rest is drag.
There it is.
There's gender applied to what that drag is.
The thing is, it's like, who cares? Like, get them all on and let the best win. In fact, there's so many layers here. First of all, not everyone is cast.
Yep.
To be, you know, colors. To be on the show as colors. Girl, 90% are fillers. 90% of fillers. They are. So I mean, and also, so just put them on there and showcase there. You know, let us appreciate it. Let us decide, you know, and let them show you. And also, you can't, I mean, it's, they're like, oh, right, you know, she'll say something about like, oh, then, you know, it's different because, you know, drag queens rhinestone and they put rhinestones on things and like how you know what would a drag king do? A drag king would rhinestone.
Again, look at the craftsmanship of somebody like Landon Cider. Landon Cider produces the most Landon Cider is still to this day produced one of the best packages I've ever seen on Dragula. There are very few performers who've killed the season the way that he did. Also a highly intelligent, very funny, very articulate person.
And also, looking at it as well, you know, she was talking about the aesthetic, you know, and they'll be in pants or they'll be in this and they're boys. It's like, can you seriously put Maya LePage next to Dawn and say that those are two similar, that they're both
different.
There are so many different types of drag. Yeah. Can you put Milk and Gia Gunn next to each other and say that is the same type of drag?
Gia certainly reminded us of that several times.
That's why they came to my head.
You're all dudes.
That's it. It's just like you, it's narrow-minded, it's shallow. The answer is no, Nasha, no.
So Nasha also went on to give the example of bearded queens, again showing that she's not actually seen many international seasons.
We got Danny Beard, the winner of UK.
Exactly, who she doesn't know. And we've had bearded queens as far back as, remember, Madame Madness on the first season of, I think Madame Madness was the first bearded queen, but they're really, really popular in the European spin-offs in particular. We've seen them on France, Italy, so many. Like, bearded queens are like the norm now as well. Not being on Drag Race US, but they just show that we do have space for this diversity. A lot of barriers have been broken down, you know. There was no real reason why trans women shouldn't have been on the show. I always thought that was ridiculous. I mean, we've seen trans men several times on the show now. Fantastic. Showing, you know, that there are so many different aspects to masculinity and drag. And also, we've had a few hyper queens now. Victoria Scone, Clover Bish, and the winner of Drag Race Germany, Pandora Knox, was a hyper queen. So many barriers have been broken down.
What about Drag Race Philippines 1, the first season of Drag Race Philippines?
I wasn't aware of a hyper queen in that cast.
Okay.
But just like I see the show, or at least one branch of the franchise. I think Brooke was hinting, actually, that they will have a drag king on the next season of Drag Race Canada. And I think Drag Race Canada is keen to show some progression. Melinda Vega was certainly in favour of it. One thing I would like to say, now, Naish is entitled to her opinion, but what I do respect is she actually sat down with Tenderoni and Landon Cider in order to educate herself about the situation.
After the fact, yes. Was she forced to? Most likely. They're like, girl, this is not going to be received well. Get your ass on that video call with them two now.
I think it's fine to be cynical, but I would give her props for entering into that conversation. I think I'm always for growth and progression, and she's hopefully showing that she's willing to do that.
Just watching the first part of the new episode. We've seen the queens, while we see Morphine celebrate her victory over sending home her sister, her Miami sister, Maya Iman LePage. Mm. Tom, I'm going to ask you this from now on.
Yeah.
Did Morphine send home Maya, or did RuPaul? Basically, did she win the lip sync, or was it a RuPaul decision?
You do pose a very interesting question. It was a close thing. Both of them put on a really good lip sync. You could argue that it was one of those fourth time in the bottom situations, and Maya would have had to have defied gravity and breathed fire to stay. So you can look at it either way.
Okay, sometimes I just want a straight answer from you, and not a pageant one.
Do you want to give the straight answer?
RuPaul sends her home.
Okay.
Absolutely. It was an amazing lip sync. That's not taken away from there. Okay. I mean, and then there's a continuation of the drama over Safira winning.
This was so funny.
Q is in her feelings. Look, first of all, we all saw last week's episode. Yeah, the winner should have been either Plain Jane or Q. And that's not me being...
We said Plain Jane on Nymphia.
Okay. Roll or Nymphia. Mm-hmm. Or Nymphia. Yeah, we'll put up her up. But, and that's not being shady. That's just being accurate. That's being truthful.
We liked Safira's performance a lot, but there's like a really distinct stumble. So I had her like third place.
Okay. I had her safe, bottom safe. I had her safe, bottom safe.
Like
I had to.
Fourth or fifth out of seven.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's just the way that Safira is talking, you know, is accepting the win. It's quite apologetic. She's not a stupid girl. She knows she shouldn't have won. She's happy she won. Absolutely.
Yeah.
She's not going to say, no, RuPaul, please, I mustn't. No, I will not accept because I don't deserve this. She's not going to do that.
I nominate Q as tribute. Yeah.
Yes. I accept this. Thank you very much for this. It was a $5,000. I've got too much money.
Yes.
I'm overflowing.
From the mini challenge, actually.
Yeah, I'm overflowing with finances, and also I don't deserve it, so I would like to give this to my sister. No, that's not going to happen.
My runway package is very cheap, actually. I don't have anything to pay off.
That's the situation, is that the winner shouldn't have been Safira, and she knows that. I mean, that's why she's very quite apologetic. She's like, oh, you know, I'm surprised I won. I don't like how you're feeling, Q, and Q's in her feeling, and she's giving silence of the lambs. She's giving nothing. She is mute. And you know what I love? Because Plain Jane is a producer's dream. Plain Jane's like, well, tell us how you feel, sister.
She's just switched on at all times.
She is a high producer because she's like, so you know, don't hold back. Tell us how you feel. So, you know, and then even though at the couch she didn't open up, afterwards when everyone's, you know, de-dragging, she goes up to her and she's like, you know, we all know who the winners of this is. And again, Q kind of shut her down. But I just love that Plain Jane is very aware that this can create a moment. And it's hilarious.
Yeah, she's very good, isn't she? Q obviously really struggles to articulate her feelings.
Does she?
Well, she makes it, she's not going to articulate it, but she's very, very clear how she feels in the moment. She is given the opportunity to express herself, doesn't feel she can. She makes that a little clearer when they come back in next day.
I tell you what I love about it, because this is what she says. She comes the next day, they ask her how she feels. She's like, Look, yesterday I was hated. Mm-hmm. I was in a hated headspace, and I knew that, which is why I was keeping quiet. You know, I didn't want to say anything that was too heated, or, you know, that anyone took as resentment, because I love you and I don't want to take this win away from you. Having said that, Safira, but you're shit, your drag shit, your performance was shit, you're shit. And it wasn't deserved.
Well, that's
it wasn't
what she says.
Deserved.
And Safira quite rightly says, oh, you could have phrased that a different way, love.
She's like, no. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a question.
She talks about it like it's an objective fact.
She's like, no, it wasn't deserved.
But I've said this about Q. She's a striver. She's probably her own worst critic, and she really struggles with what she perceives as criticism, I think. And in this case, she felt quite invalidated by not getting the win. And her feelings roam free. Her feelings roam free.
What I love is that she said, I didn't want to say anything yesterday because I would have said something bad.
Uh-huh.
And then proceeds to say something bad.
Because she says it's an objective truth.
Yeah, but now that I'm relaxed and calm and not heated anymore, I just want to say, you're shit. And it wasn't deserved. No. That wasn't a question. It wasn't deserved. You're a crap.
She's very funny, isn't
she? Safira, how are you going to let someone talk to you like that? You know what I was waiting for, Tom?
Yeah.
What you said, what you told me she had when I disagreed with last week. I was waiting for a bit of spontaneity from Safira. I wanted her to come out of that perfection of a shell and just let loose. And just let loose.
There's a self-assured quality to Safira that I don't think she feels she needs to get into these tussles. She's like, she's very, very clear, kind of, the win was given to me. There's nothing you can do about that. This interaction means nothing. You know, why get upset about it?
Well, you know what? I think it could have gone somewhere had that bloody buzzer not have gone on.
It's like the celebrities coming in and untucked and ruining it. It's like, producers, get your act together. Let the girls argue. Let them hash it out. Don't cut them off.
Exactly. So this week, the Maxi Challenge is Tuam. They're going to be starring in a hot new design show, and it's called Bathroom Hunties. Working in pairs, they need to design a duo design model powder room.
Ooh.
Powder room, is that like a bath? It's a bathroom. It's a what?
A toilet.
Toilet, okay.
A loo.
Now, they're all working for the same client. It's an eclectic couple, and they're opening a nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
So they want their powder room to be over the top, and it's filled with unexpected features and amenities, and it has to be 100% gender inclusive. Now, the pairs are Plain Jane and Safira, Nymphia and Dawn, and Q and Morphine.
Okay.
What does this design, what does this week's Maxi Challenge conjure up over from, you know, Maxi Challenges past that are similar?
It evokes memories of challenges from All Stars 4 and All Stars 5, which have been design-oriented. So one springs to mind, the Club Design Challenge from
96.
Yes, the iconic Club 96 from All Stars 4, and also the Hotels Design Challenge. I don't know why I'm doing this for you.
I really like it.
Do you?
Yeah.
I think it's a little dash of the Divine David, but just not going all the way. But yeah, there's the Hotel Design Challenge from All Stars 5. So, as I recall, there was obviously this room design element, and you've always got to make it funny. You've always got to make RuPaul laugh. But I think they kind of had to make it somewhat desirable to go to or stay in as well. So if we think about the club one, as I recall, the winning team was Latrice and Trinity and Manila.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with the B-themed club. And there was like this big improv element to it as well, because it was like Carson and Michelle and Rita Ora, I think. And what's her name? New York Club Night. Suzanne Barge all went along to enjoy the nightlife, didn't they? So there was like a comedic improv element as well. It was like semi-scripted. You had to have fun with your clients.
Yes.
So it's quite a complex challenge, actually.
Spell urethramycin.
Erythromycin.
Erythromycin. I thought that was funny. I thought Trinity really came alive there. I thought that was really funny.
Yep.
Well, I also do appreciate that Manila just went into full design mode. She's got a degree in architecture,
worked as a graphic designer.
I mean, yeah. And it showed because that place looked amazing.
So, interestingly, the winners were Latrice and Trinity. Manila wasn't included in the top two. But I remember Trinity very sweetly gave her half a cash prize.
Aww.
Which is nice. That is the episode when Valentina and Naomi were in the bottom two for Club 96. Interestingly, the most memorable thing from the episode,
it
probably
really is.
Everybody Club still 96. Goes, Club 96, with their rhyming couplets and all the weirdness.
What was the challenge where we had Alexis Mateo?
Mm-hmm.
And all that comes to my mind is her shaking the hairspray and then popping off, and her face just being like, "What?"
Just like Alexis is fantastic when her natural, you know, amazing humor and charm comes through.
Absolutely.
So that was hotel designs. It was very similar kind of format. I remember Alexis was with India and Jujubee. And they made like a jungle themed one. As I recall, wasn't that Jujubee's like first ever win? But they said that Blair St. Clair and Mayhem's, they actually thought theirs was the best, but Juju was like the best performer. It was one of those weird judging episodes. And they just weren't featuring poor Mayhem.
No.
I think that's when she got demoralized. But yeah, it was very, very similar. Like they had to bounce off the guest judges. It had to be reasonable design-wise, somewhere people would like to go, but fun, frothy, cute, conceptual.
Yeah, I think the name of the game is improv,
mm-hmm.
is just going off the fly, having a good script that you can go in and out of.
Very good, very good, yeah.
So, you know, have exactly what you want to say, mm-hmm. you know, already have your pre-planned jokes, your pre-planned improv moments,
uh-huh.
but also needing to go on the fly. OTF on the fly, whenever Michelle and them ask you something. That's it. I think that's the name of this game.
If we think, it is really good to have somebody with a good eye for design on your team, but also, exactly as you've said, the funny people are going to excel at this. So if we look at the pairs, Nymphia and Dawn are going to bring a lot of... I'm looking forward to seeing what theirs looks like. We've got two really cool conceptual visual people here. Mm. Will they bring the improv and the funny? Not so sure.
For me, I'm thinking, who did well in Snatch Game? And that gives me an idea on how they can riff with one another, how they can riff with each other. How are they in terms of writing? I think Dawn is a good writer, and I think Nymphia takes good direction when given the material.
Yep.
So I think in that sense, they'll do well. It's just the improv.
Yep.
Plain Jane is, for me, an all-rounder. She's going to be great regardless, and being paired with Safira, they're going to be awesome.
It really interests me what the visuals are going to be like there, because I think they come from different places visually. You know, Safira's into grandeur, opulence. I just expect her to go big. And Jane, her style is kind of like sexy, somewhat pared down, just not as opulent as Safira's. So it'll be really interesting to see how that comes together visually. Q and Morphine, I don't think they're going to have fantastic chemistry as improvisers and comedians. They may prove me wrong.
Well, designers, I mean, first of all, I think that they're going to have the best looking place. We've got
I think Nymphia's and Dawn's is going to be the best looking.
Mm, I don't know.
But Q will bring fantastic design eye to it.
And then it's the whole improv, the moments, because Q tends to, you know how we talked about Scarlet Envy, mm-hmm. how when she's performing, she comes across too on and mm-hmm, too mm-hmm. scripted and unnatural. And I think Q has a tendency of going down that same path where she has that character that is a bit like not natural, not like it's not like Plain Jane where it's natural and it's just free flowing. It's a bit like this is here, hello, ha ha ha, like laugh now make it. It's just a bit on.
Yeah,
that's where I'm at with them. I hope they prove me wrong. I hope this brings out something new in them that we can just like, you know, wow at.
What would your concept be
for this, a bathroom?
Yeah, You gotta make it work. Don't bore Nina.
Oh gosh, you're putting me on the spot here.
It yeah, I am just, afraid.
I don't know.
I think it'd be, and I think there's probably going to be at least one of them is going to make it all about like cottaging, aren't they? Well, and glory so holes.
That's what
things.
I was thinking, but yeah. I was like, I don't want to be that girl.
You could make it a celebration of like cottaging as a gay tradition, and just really like make light of it, but explore the history of it. You know, have a little cutout of George Michael.
Yeah,
that sort of thing.
Work.
Let's go outside.
Tom, let's talk about what we see in the workroom, because that's what we do here.
With our eyes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Tom, you're watching, but are you seeing?
That's the question. Mm. Yeah, yeah. I'm hearing. No, I'm listening, but am I hearing? You know, I'm touching.
But am I feeling? But are you feeling? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So glad that we can share.
Oh, I'm just really glad we got that off our chests, really. Yeah. That's a really important conversation. Thank you, Barlow.
What did you see in the workroom? Present.
Well, I guess, first of all, the girls went and painted their little rooms. It's very, very reminiscent of the challenges we mentioned earlier. I can quite picture, remember, Monet and Mohart?
Of course.
And the did you paint it up and down or side to side? And she's like, up and down. Who says?
Jesus. And then she proceeds to do it.
Side to side.
Side to side.
She was giving rebellious Mo. But I mean, you know, this is just like fun and hijinks and stuff, really. I guess one thing, you know, we saw a little bit more about their dynamics. Nymphia and Dawn, very different pairing to Dawn and Maya from last week. But I'm not really seeing them clicking. What do you think?
Maybe they'll come together. Maybe they'll come together in the final product. I mean, they were expressing as well the improv, that there might be difficulty in there. And that was more coming from Nymphia, as we predicted.
Nymphia was coming across a little critical, a little shutting Dawn down. I mean,
but this, do we believe her? But do we believe
I actually
her?
Think Nymphia, being such a fabulously visual artist, will be quite clear about what she wants in this situation and will be fairly assertive, and I think that's what we're seeing. But I don't know, Dawn was taking it in her stride. She was like, yeah, there's no bad ideas. Yeah, she might shoot a few things down. Yeah, she might shoot down all of my ideas.
Q and Morphine are a funny couple. They really are. You know what? I'm actually really loving their, really loving their dynamic. You know what I love the most is Q, because Morphine was chicken, and Morphine was like, bitch, I don't want you to bring the energy from last week here. And she was like, you would never have known, though. But you would never have known that I was pissed off yesterday. So, like, what are you talking about, bringing this bad energy? Girl,
I love
roll
that.
Roll the tapes.
She was, in her mind, she expertly concealed and suppressed her feelings and was the height of professionalism. I think she was shocked that Safira even picked up.
Yeah.
I think in her mind, she was like, a producer told you to say that, didn't they?
Morphine, why are you bringing this up? Yeah. Like, no one would have known had you guys not prodded me over and over.
Yeah.
I heard it very well. I was very professional. Why are you coming for me? Q, how do they give Plain Jane that delusion award? It is absolutely all of Q's.
Well, I think they're a bit afraid of giving it to Q, to be honest, because she'd have been like, what do you mean? And we'd have had another dark cloud moment.
I do love that Safira brought up the conversation again about, you know, the undeserved comment.
So we're back in the actual workroom now, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was interesting as well, because that word invalidation made me click back to Untucked early in the season, when Q said that Plain had invalidated her feelings, and she doesn't quite see that she has a tendency to invalidate other people at times. I just think she's so focused on winning, she can get really blinkered and just really not see things from other people's point of view at times and appreciate their feelings. I think that's just how she is. Because she's so hyper-focused. But when it's brought to her attention, she does apologize.
Well, in a way.
In a way. In a way. In a way.
She's like, you know, she kind of, she doubled down. In a sense, she doubled down on the undeserved comment. And then she said, maybe I should have said I didn't agree with it. So, yeah, she kind of acknowledges it. There is still that whole, you know what, I said what I said.
Hmm.
Said what I sad moment. Let's just come to Plain Jane. Now, Plain Jane, you know, obviously she looked for her note. She's gone through her storyboard. And on the menu today is cry.
It's also, it's vulnerability.
Yeah, today it's is vulnerability. Tears. Okay, look, we're getting close to the end. We're 3/4 of the way. Now I need to start showing the cracks.
Oh, say crack again.
Crack.
It's so interesting with Plain, isn't it? Because our go-to when she expresses emotion is like, this is part of the Plain Jane story arc. You can't fool us, Plain. I would say when I think about this, there is some sincerity to it, I think, because I do remember her sharing earlier in the season, unless, you know, I am just eating up the carefully laid breadcrumbs that she's placed throughout the season. But she told us about her upbringing and how she comes from a strict kind of a Russian immigrant family who, I don't know how things are today, but at first didn't accept her homosexuality. And there was this real sense of having grown up in an environment with lots of criticism that she's probably internalized that would erode her self-esteem, making her own harshest critic, but also explains her tendency to criticize others. So, you know, there's self to self and self to other there. And I think she has what feels like a sincere and genuine conversation with Mother Safira. What did you get in sense of genuineness?
Genuinity. It is hard because Plain Jane is the, you know, she is the producer.
Yeah.
She has been working this since day one. And so maybe this is real emotion. And you know what? Maybe it is, but it's just hard for me to just think that every single thing is calculated.
Yeah.
With her. So I do think it comes from a place of honesty, but like she has to understand that, you know, like she's kind of bred us to think this
bred
way.
Us?
Yeah.
Please.
Carbs. Is butter a carb?
She's a little bit the girl who cried wolf, isn't she?
Yeah. But taking that all aside, yeah, I do think that there is obviously, as you see, a harsh critic.
Yes.
And it's really nice, the tips that Safira gave her. She said, look, write it down, read it out, rip it up, throw it away, which I thought was really nice. I thought that was great advice. But Dr. Thomas, as I say, hi, just yourself.
Allegedly.
Do you have any advice for people who are going through hardship or going through, what would you call this?
Well,
That Plain Jane's experiencing, and how would you any tips to get over it?
First of all, I did really like, I always like Mother Safira and her gentle and kind support for the others. If she doesn't win, she has to be Miss Congeniality. So I just think she's adorable. And I thought what she said was really like, it was a really nice kind of intervention, if you like. I mean, what Plain is describing really is a struggle with her self-esteem and how she projects this outward, fierce, armoured persona to try and deflect from that, really, and to not let anybody in and not let anybody even realise how much she struggles with it. In terms of how would somebody, and I'm talking in general terms, not talking about Plain herself, would somebody address this? It's up to the individual. There's lots of therapeutic approaches that could be helpful. A few things that I think could be helpful, because obviously my training's in cognitive analytic therapy, I think it all begins with a formulation and understanding where it comes from. We do have some clues there. We've already spoken about them and I won't repeat myself, but yeah, developing a diagrammatic and perhaps a written reformulation to understand those processes we were talking about earlier, this perhaps self-esteem trap that she might have, struggling with the self-esteem, kind of not letting people in, soldiering on her own, that kind of thing. There might be that sort of trap going, but understanding the process is really important to begin with. I personally think that if you just kind of tackle the problem without understanding the root of it, you may not get that far. But then there are a range of different techniques that you can use to then address it. And you could take bits from like cognitive behavioral therapy, compassion focused therapy. I loved Safira's technique. That's something anybody can use in terms of thinking about their own self-doubts and worries. Journaling can be really, really helpful like that. You don't have to tear it up and throw it away. You can journal it. You can write it down, you can understand it, you can turn the page. Other things that can be helpful, like in a therapy situation, you could do some role play in terms of addressing a person who may have significantly affected your self-esteem. You could do, there's a technique that I always like called the compassionate friend, where you picture somebody or something in your life. Sometimes it's better to use, like, in inverted commas, a thing, like a favorite object or an animal. Actually, is always a pet animal is a really good example, and think, ask them, what would they say to you in this situation? Animals, pets are a good example because they're not complex in terms of our relationship with them. People, our relationships are complex. We can have good and bad moments with them, but pets are just really straightforward and we know that they love us and they'd say something kind to us. So, you know, if you were struggling, for example, you could ask, what would Lily say to you? What would Lavender say to you? But those are just a couple of things. Compassion-focused therapy is often a really good approach when people struggle with their self-esteem. So having lots of really good self-soothing techniques can be, or anxiety management techniques can be helpful.
Love it. All right, well, let's get into the Bathroom Hunties Maxi Challenge performance.
Here we are.
I just want to start with by saying that the shit they put these drag queens through.
I know, right? They've had them, like, painting, like, I wondered with the last one, like, how much is painted did they actually do? But with this, it looked like they were doing all the painting.
Like, the shit they make them do, like, this challenge is bizarre to me. I'm sorry.
I guess, like, the concept is something like a drag queen should be able to, I mean, the original should be able to design a fun club night, right? But it's gone on to hotels and now toilets.
It's just,
is that in a drag queen skill set?
I just feel sorry for these queens sometimes for the price of entertainment. Design a toilet experience.
They're good sports, aren't they? They're good sports.
Okay, now the first queens are Kieran Morphine, and they've come up with a hell-themed, the naughty potty. Naughty potty. What did you think?
Should we start off with the design? Obviously, yeah. It was very like Hieronymus Bosch meets South Park, wasn't it? It was like a cartoonish hellscape.
Yeah, it was the Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
Spooky Mormon. Yeah, hell,
it was very
dream.
That. Yeah, 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 yeah.
It was that. I liked it. I thought it was good. They had a clear theme throughout from beginning to end.
You could tell what it was. Yeah. You knew you were in hell.
Yeah. Everything made sense. They made it make sense. The comedy factor with them, you know, they let loose.
I said let loose.
They let loose. I do. I just, we're in hell.
But it was we're in hell.
But the awkward thing was that they'd be like, they'll you know, they'll get crazy.
Yeah.
We're in hell. And then there was that little awkward, like, millisecond after where they're just like, huh, now what? You know? Like, you could see that little bit of, okay, we did that.
Okay, that's us then.
Back to being pretty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was the chemistry between them two, I thought, was cute.
Yeah.
I think they did a good job. I think maybe Q held the character a bit better. She kind
agree.
Of held the pairing better.
I think Morphine's character was supposed to be a bit ditzier and a bit more like Valley Girl, which she did well, but she fluffed a few lines and had to turn to Q.
She has this habit of telling us, like last week when she stuffed up, she goes, oh, drag queen flopping, and then she's like, oh my god, I forgot.
I think this is new to her. I don't think she's very used to learning lines, delivering them, and yeah, she struggles to memorize them at times or gets a bit overwhelmed.
I do like the shattered mirror. Seven years of bad luck. I thought that was really in theme.
Like the comment of the last one to look into this is my Amanda LePage, and that's why it broke. that was a good joke.
The hand cloak holder, which just dropped their ish.
Uh-huh.
The tickle torture, which I thought, you know, come on, this is not how that'd be.
Would that be your heaven, Mama?
Yeah, I'd be like, come on, like having someone like that, like that. This is that was not on theme. That we all love to tickle their handsome man. Like, let's keep it real. Let's keep it 100. No, it was cute. Now, what did you think about their looks though on the runway?
Okay, so there, yeah, obviously it's all this. That's the order. So, runway looks. I thought Morphine looked really, really gorgeous. This is quite a detailed chain look, reminiscent of some looks I've seen by the Blondes. Loved the wig. It was very Cher. If I gave one little thing, and Q is guilty of this sometimes, is there was this unadorned panty just like right in the middle that in the midst of this beautiful outfit just kind of drew the eye. Like that could, you could have stoned or something, that panty, just to not make it look like this plain flat surface. I'm being overly critical, but this is the top six because the rest of her outfit was really, really gorgeous.
I loved her outfit. It was amazing. How would you describe the dangles?
The danglies, the chains.
The chains.
Yeah, there were chains, I think. Yeah. Hence she, the theme.
She looked like a fashion chandelier.
Mm.
She was shimmery. She was glimmery.
A bit like Katy Perry and Moschino at the Met Gala.
I loved
Jeremy it. Scott.
And what about Q?
Q, I guess with Q, it was very Q. It was very kind of out of the box. She was wearing this sort of pleather PVC-y two-piece. The chains were adorning the legs and the arms. She looked cool. It felt a bit less high concept than some of the other Q looks that I've seen, but she always looks polished and she always looks great.
Everything that you said, I loved it. I wasn't a fan of the wig.
Q's.
Yeah, uh-huh. Wasn't a fan of the wig. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is Q's element. I wonder if she made it. Do you think she made it?
May have done. She makes a lot, but not all of her stuff.
Nymphia and Dawn, mm-hmm, with the Fart Museum.
How crude.
It's just...
They've lowered the tone, haven't
they? Come on. What did you think? Did you like it?
I mean, I like it. I like it. Were they able to bring the funny... Not 100% sure. What I kept on thinking, I thought of this a bit with the first one as well. Who's the funniest person here? Carson.
Oh.
I just think he's really quippy and funny.
Oh.
Like, I really rate Carson as a judge because he has fashion expertise, but I actually find him funnier than Ross. No?
No.
Is that controversial?
You go off. Go off. She came in a fight. She came to fight.
You tell me. Am I way off base here in terms of like Q and Nymphia and their chemistry and creating comedy? Because at the end of the day, they should be making us laugh in this.
Yeah, I was really, taken and sold by Nymphia's performance. I think Nymphia was the stronger picture. Was the Beyonce here up here?
Uh huh. Uh-huh.
She held her character. She was funny. She was, you know, just this over the top, really eccentric, you know, type of artist, person that you see at the museum. And she kept that from beginning to end. She convinced me more. I kind of lost the fart a lot. Like, I think it was more art
did somebody mention.
It was an art museum and they just added the fart in because I just didn't see any.
There's only like one pump in there, wasn't there?
Yeah, I didn't see that. But I do feel that Dawn kind of got a bit tongue-tied at times.
Yeah, she did,
didn't she?
Yeah.
You could see on her face the struggle. The struggle was there. There was a tendency of, you know, someone, the girls talking over one another.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
More Nymphia. But still, I think Nymphia killed it.
I agree with everything you've just said.
I think that the look was nice. It was very arty. The
Yeah, the aesthetic was appealing, actually. Yeah, I think they did really well.
I would like
as to, I'd expect from these two.
Yeah, I would like to go to this. I would be happy to be in a club, and that was the bathroom.
I think, yeah, that is probably something we should comment on, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, I do think it felt like a nice, relaxing environment. You know, so long as Nymphia and Dawn weren't in there watching me, I'd be having a nice time and relaxing and doing what I need to do.
I would love that. Whee! I'd love to be in the toilet and it's moving. I just think it's a great experience. So I think it would add to the party vibe of the club.
I don't know. I think everything might tense up and it might not do what I needed to do.
No, Tom, no, I would perform. Talk to me about their looks.
Their looks, well, Nymphia's is really, really gorgeous. I love that. I mean, she just kills her own way every episode. She's not done a single bad look. This look is possibly a little simpler than most of her other looks, but it's still beautiful. This like beautifully molded corset with the blue and white, almost willow pattern kind of. I like the contrast between this dominatrix vibe and the softness of the color scheme. And she's got these chains and knots and tassels. She's always looks like $1 million, but I like the way she performed with the whip. That felt that it's like she can bring something new. Which oh, you can crack a whip as well. Like you can do everything.
I would love to see her standing or doing a duo with the Vivian.
Yes,
and her that cat woman,
the cat woman,
because
yeah.
The colors and the whip
actually,
for me,
yes,
it was
yes.
Very it gave me that vibe. Tom.
Do you know who won't be invited? J.J. Lee, because she couldn't crack that whip.
Say crack.
Crack.
Okay, cool. Next up, we got Dawn.
So Dawn, I say this a lot about Dawn. This feels like a very typical Dawn look. Her look is so distinct, and I love the fact that she has such a unique vision. She does bring like the ruching, the cutouts, those sorts of things. This is a simpler look for Dawn. Dare I say an elegant Dawn look? I think that Order of Their Own Ways is a little unfortunate because the chain details were a little similar to last week's. Look, that's not her fault. She didn't know what order these runways are going to come in. But like quite a simple and elegant Dawn look, I think.
The last one we have is Plain Jane and Sathira with their bootlickers, a speakeasy.
Go for it. Tell me what you think.
I think that Plain Jane is just so funny.
Yep.
I just think Plain Jane is a star hostess. I think she can riff really well. I think her improv skills are great. I mean, there were so many things that she did that I love. That she did the whole, you know, keep getting Safira's name wrong. Sequoia, Shakira.
That was good. That was really good.
I really loved that she kept that up. The unemployment thing. I mean, their one would probably be my favorite only because there was a liquor everywhere.
But I actually think they were the funniest performers as well, and their chemistry was so good. I completely agree with everything you said about Plain, but I honestly felt like they were on equal footing. Neither of them shone more than the other. They both bounced really well. You can just tell they're both experienced hostesses who can just riff, improvise. They've got little things they can go to. They had a clear storyline. They went for a really good concept, really. Let's just go for like this speakeasy Prohibition era theme. It was just very, very good. There was lots for them to play with.
It was a great pairing.
Yeah.
It was a really great pairing. I really also like the you know, we're also into scat because it's the jazz. But you know what scatting is, isn't it?
Thank you, I do, yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's okay. Singing.
It's that style of singing in jazz.
Beep-ba-ba-da-bop.
There was like the old Nokia.
No, there was a hit. There was a hit in the UK in the
90s. But you're giving me like Nokia, like...
There was this like novelty hit in the UK in the 90s called Scatman, and that's how it went.
The opera skills of our queen Safira was just beautiful,
and yet they turned it into something entertaining and comedic, didn't they, with Jane with a little triangle and stuff.
It reminded me at university there was a group of us we're having lunch. And then someone was talking about, you know, I think they were playing some instrument. It was I'm going to say like the, what's that one with the keyboard and the
accordion.
An accordion. Talking about how she was learning that, how it took so long. And then there was one guy in the group who was obviously very gay, but he was very serious. And he goes, well, I also too played an instrument. I was in a band. And then you're like, oh, what was it? He goes, so I play the triangle. And I was, but he said it with such serious. And he goes, I played the triangle as though it was just as complex as he called it. And then I was laughing.
Were you like, did you get your grade 4 certificate?
I was laughing. And he goes, no, it's actually really hard because it's not just, and he was telling us about it. He goes, it's not just about how you hit it. He goes, it's about the pull and the release. And I remember him saying that it's about the pull and the release
that
of the triangle.
You, it?
And it's really hard. And like, so he goes, there's pressure because sometimes you have the last note because you're the ding. And he goes, so yeah. I just remember him talking about it with such like conviction that this is harder. Okay, you play the violin, I play the triangle, mama.
I've
try
learned
that
something today. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. Great vibes. Safira just being such a warm, great host, and then Plain Jane just being that comedy, the combination was great, and it looked beautiful. What do you think about their looks?
They look great. So Plain is giving us fairly classic Plain Jane, body conscious silhouette. The shades of Tierra Mugler in here. I know that's an easy go-to reference for a metallic robotic look, but he is the reference, isn't he? Let's face it.
Yeah.
So, you know, giving kind of Nadja Auermann in the metallic one, or the robotic one that Zendaya recently wore on the red carpet for Dune. That's just fantastic.
She looked bloody amazing.
But she looks great, and she always does. She always looks polished, and that shape is just amazing.
Absolutely agree. Saphira is, I mean, just fantastic. Her runway package is just phenomenal. She
spent money.
She has given us variety.
She really has.
Bloody hell, this look is amazing.
I don't think I've seen her in a body conscious cat suit yet, but she's giving us this PVC sort of puppy play look, which is just fantastic. You know, the spotty dog and the little fire hydrant accessory.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's concept here, because she went with Chain and she was like dog on a lead, BDSM themes, and she's combined all of that to create something that's really visually appealing. She just looks fantastic.
Who's got your favorite look on the runway?
Saphira, but also Morphine's up there. I just wish she'd stoned that panty.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's between Morphine and Saphira for me.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, Nymphia, actually, I do love Nymphia's as well. That's half of them.
Yeah, God, Jesus Christ. Anyone else you want to throw up there?
All of
them.
For
me, the winning pair is Plain Jane and Saphira.
I think this would justify a double win.
You reckon?
I think it'll go to Plain, because Saphira is riding high off a win last week. But I actually think this would be a rare, very justified double win.
And the bottoms would be who? Dawn and Morphine.
Pardon?
Dawn and Morphine were the...
So you'd actually separate the pairs?
Yeah.
And yes, I think that would be fair, actually, to look at the, in inverted commas, weaker links from each pair.
But if there had to be a weaker pairing, I would say maybe Dawn and Nymphia.
I'm thinking maybe Q and Morphine, but I don't know. There's not a lot in it, to be honest. It's really hard to say.
Yeah, you're right. It was hard to find a bottom pair, but for me, it was easier to find two bottom individuals.
I think it's worth reflecting on what you said earlier. This is a really weird, tough challenge that doesn't necessarily fit a lot of drag queen skill sets.
Yeah, but it's Drag Race.
It's Drag Race.
Double win, mama, you called that.
I just thought it was so like chemistry based and such a close thing. I couldn't choose between them. I just felt it was really justified. So Saphira's our first girl with four wins this season. Enters the four wins club.
Not the four wins,
you know,
club.
They're with Sasha Colby, Simone, Gigi Good.
Sharon Needles.
The first, yeah. So quite an exclusive club.
And not to be confused with Sharon Needles the second. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
I'll be here all night. Tip your waitress. As you were, Tom. As you were.
Let's
please
just hope
proceed.
There is no Sharon Needles the second. Plain is our second girl with three wins. So she's stepping into second position. A very strong track record there as well. Neither of them has ever lip synced. We have two very dominant forces in this competition, I'm afraid.
And those two dominant forces are... the BBL that belongs to...
both of those dominant forces, yes.
Both of these dominant forces belong to one queen, Morphine.
The West Cheek and the East Cheek, yes.
Morphine and Dawn are on the bottom and they are lip-syncing for their lives. And it's too baddy-addy-addy-addy. As soon as you heard it, before I even started, I was like, this is Morphine's. Come on, because the lip-sync isn't Dawn and Morphine. It's... Dawn in the BBL.
It really, really is. And I mean, I actually wasn't that familiar with the song, but I really like it. It's great and perfect for Morphine.
Morphine's done this a million times. She knew the dance to it. She just had it. She had the attitude. She had the sassitude. Mm-hmm. She had the flavor. It just belonged to her.
Really did.
And you just take one look at her, and the mm-hmm. song was hers. Dawn, this just wasn't her song. We just knew that. We knew that the song was definitely for Morphine. And Morphine did it at this point. She was amazing. She killed it. She gave us I loved it.
Very, very enjoyable performance from Morphine. Dawn gave it her best shot. It's our first time seeing her lip sync.
And it'll be our last. Because
I think it will, unfortunately. But, you know, she really put the work in here. She was just paling in comparison to Morphine, really.
One thing that I think is unfair is that if the win was a duo,
yeah.
If the win was a pair,
yeah.
They should have been judged as a pair.
So I'm going to ask you again then, who should that have been? Because you feel so strongly about it.
I would have put Morphine and Q in the bottom.
Yep, but that would have been Q going home, and they're not ready for that. Oh,
could you imagine? First of all, could we imagine Morphine versus Q to the song? You know, my mind goes straight to when Q and Nymphia were talking, and mm-hmm. Nymphia was like, oh, people don't know, but I'm a great dancer, I'm a great performer, and then Q says, good. Me too, and then Nymphia did that robot dance.
That was my favourite, I loved it so much.
But the winner of this lip sync is absolutely Morphine, do you agree?
Fully.
We were correct. We say goodbye to Dawn, and what an emotional send-off.
It was very, very lovely. I really appreciated her gratitude for the process. She seems to have had a good time. She said she was crying tears of happiness. This felt like an organic end to Dawn's story on the show. I will remember her. We'll remember her. She's not dead. I will remember her for just her distinct aesthetic and those looks, and for being a secret little villainess as well. Yeah. She's a little mischievous pixie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when she was alive, she was such a light. I remember when she would make us laugh and cry.
Yeah, I know. And fond memories. Yeah. Fond memories.
Next week's a makeover. So everyone make sure that you join us.
And
make
guys,
sure that you
remember, anything can happen in a makeover. This is when they really pull some shenanigans.
Oh, absolutely. Always. Any good making of it dancers?
Some pretty hot dancers by the looks of it. By conventional standards.
Yeah, yeah. Turning masculine faces into feminine beauty.
Do you know what? We'll break it down a bit more next week. I'm sure there'll be range in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Does she have the range? Absolutely. Yeah. Everyone, thank you very much for listening. Make sure that you join us. This is Bolo.
And Dr. Tom.
See you guys next week.
Lots of love, guys. See you soon.